A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald. Narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note. Strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Chapter 6. Robbie Duke drove as if she was a kamikaze screaming towards a cliff, yet her demeanor was mostly calm. She kept a vigilant eye on the horizon, which looked murky. This was common in the United Wastes and was nothing to worry about. Not much had been said since they had left the safe confines of the bunker, and she could not yet say if this was because Arthur was not happy to be near her. There was an equal possibility that no words could be heard above the blaring rock and roll cassette tape playing over the van speakers, something labeled The Doors that Rabia had been playing nonstop. This, of course, was a rational excuse for why he had been silent, but very few words had been exchanged the night before. After setting up camp and eating separately, she had eaten something from her medicine bag and had taken a bottle of tequila to her burlap tent. She had briefly shaken the bottle at Arthur with kind eyes and said, "Want?" But when Arthur shook his head, there was nothing said until morning. Arthur had spent the night alone in his tent, presumably rereading the old pre-war map given to them, his area of census measured out in a red ink border. She was disappointed by his distance, but also disappointed that the something from her bag had done very little. She suspected that Arthur would be entirely content if this lack of communication lasted for the rest of their journey. His trust was probably hard-earned, but she could hardly fault him for that. She was the same way. Besides, he had probably never met a woman as kick-ass as her. Men tend to get pouty when they are around kick-ass women. Rabia, however, no matter how callous or mercurial, was more amicable for socialization. She regarded Arthur with the corners of her eyes as she drove, noting that he was wearing a seatbelt, even though there was no more law requiring him to do so. There was no seatbelt around her, and in truth, if she was the van's only occupant, there wouldn't be any pants either. After a moment of staring at him, she turned the volume down, and Arthur sat up straight. "What is it? Did you hear something?" he asked with frightful urgency. She hadn't noticed before, but Arthur was incredibly tense. His knuckles were white and sharp from his bones, mirroring the pinhole-like irises bulging out of his sockets in cold fear. The awkward silence between them was likely this sense of terror eating at his psyche. They had little in common, but Arthur struck Rabia as a people-pleaser, so surely those differences would have melted for this man's need for social equilibrium. She was willing to bet on it, and she only bet on sure things. This poor bastard had probably been stressing himself out since they left the safety of the bureaucratic snipers posted throughout the urban wastes, though Robbie's job was to keep him safe, and not to make him feel safe. She supposed that she could do the man a kindness and put the sweating bastard at ease. "No, nothing aside from the gypsy ramblings from the speakers," she replied. "We are in the dust plains now. There won't be any land pirates for miles. The only thing we need to look out for is the squealing of our Geiger counter. Just wanted to have a professional conversation. I know that it's easy to get off on the wrong foot with me, but I promise you, I am one of the good guys. You doing okay?" Rabia said all this as sweetly as she was capable, which was, at the very least, slightly more sugary than a saltine. Arthur did not answer her immediately, and with the rock and roll no longer screeching like a banshee, the only noise that could be heard was the labored purr of the engines and the faint blast of sand from the outside. The dust plains were vast, a picture of infertile sand spanning in every direction. This was once farm country, the heart and soul of America. Corn and wheat once shot up from the ground like harpoons out of a cannon. There was so much of the stuff growing so quickly that only a mechanized nation could even attempt containing it. Now, the only grain that came from this country was of a fine rock, whittled down by wind. Rumor on the caravan said that the whitest grains were the remnants of bone, blown away from the equally deserted city that the dust plains surrounded. Arthur sighed deeply and had begun to relax. Rabia was right. He was far too polite to simply ignore her, so she would have the conversation she wanted. She would never admit it aloud, but she did relish the chance to talk to a civil man. It was a nice change of pace from your common wastelander, who was only interested in getting into her pants from conniving or by force. Arthur's mouth opened to say something, but then closed quickly. He stirred in his seat, shifting his weight awkwardly. "Yeah, I'm okay," he said. "Just shaken. The unknown scares me, and I've never been this far from the bunker. I never realized how comforting the IRS border snipers were until today. The furthest away from the bunker I have ever been is just outside the suburbs, and they're only a day's walk from the bunker, and only hours from the safety of the snipers." "Indeed," Rabia responded, letting the wheel go to light a cigarette. She made no effort to slow down, but kept an eye on the murky horizon. It took just a few seconds for Arthur to realize that he had only answered her question and had not regarded the rest of her statement. "The IRS wouldn't hire you if you were a bad guy, I suppose. I don't know. I'm just not used to outsiders." More sand blasted the windshield. The mechanical purr of the engines raged on. Arthur found the need to clarify. "Not that there is anything wrong with outsiders." The Geiger counter squeaked as quietly as a tamed hamster. "Holy magnet of destitution," Rabia cursed as she slammed on the brakes. Arthur's seatbelt tightened and dug firmly into his chest. Rabia looked down and over her shades, her eyes as bulged as Arthur's just moments ago. Panic rang in her head. The horizon. "Shelter," she hissed. "My God, man, we need shelter. Do you see that goddamn storm brewing?" Had her eyes not been trained to see it, had she not spent an entire childhood staring off into the distance, fearing this very boogeyman, they could have driven into the worst of it. The Geiger counter chirped once more. A dust storm. "What? What's wrong?" Arthur asked, gasping for breath. "That brown haze in the distance. It's picking up momentum. This van isn't lined with lead, is it?" Arthur shook his head. "With the scarcity of gas and the rapid increase in its price in the economy, the IRS elected to go without lead plating in our vans to save on weight. It has saved the agency." "Black-hearted bastards! We need to find the van cover before this thing picks up some mojo and we get cooked alive in this vicious can." They were a day's drive from the city, and structures like barns or farmhouses that used to be out in the plains had been sheared away from the earth by the hot, irradiated dust storms that Rabia now feared were ahead of them. "What?" was all Arthur could manage. "You see that haze out there?" Rabia asked, deciding not to elicit patience. "That haze is probably 6 hours out, but covers the entire horizon. Those winds blow about as fast as this van goes, and they blow with irradiated dust. When that foul thing hits, it will be like a sandblaster having sex with a microwave. One of those things is inconvenient. Both is nuclear castration." "What? There is no time to be verbose. Chuck half of your canteen, then grab one of the shovels. We are going to dig hatefully, then tip this bastard van on its side and into our hole, and we camp out here until that storm passes, or God blinks and forgets we're here." Now, damn it!" Rabia leaped from the van, threw the side door open, and pawed desperately at their supplies. Arthur was frozen until the urgency finally sunk in. Knowing that their lives depended on his quick actions, he unbuckled his seatbelt, opened the glove box, and subtracted one full canteen from the inventory list.
"I said now!"
Rabia screamed from outside. She said dig hatefully, so hatefully they dug. The Geiger counter chirped softly, with long pauses between each piece of song. But as the hole grew deeper and the storm closer, the chirps became more elongated and more frequent. They paused only for water, and only for as long as Rabia let them. Her murderous gaze stopped Arthur from subtracting from the manifest, which was fine because Arthur had a knack for keeping these things in his head anyway. Rabia was fit, having spent her life fighting off death, but her frame was slender and not accustomed to the terrible labor. But she was still quicker at digging than Arthur. It was not that Arthur lacked the work ethic, and although he was a little taller than Rabia, and a little broader, the only labor his body had known was running in fright. This made him terrible at digging. The day's light had muted, but not from the sun's march forward, but because the storm that once looked like a small haze in the horizon had closed its distance and was now like a mountain, fluid in movement. Hours had gone by. They dug down, then they dug in. Both had become exhausted long ago. They kept digging. More hours, more digging. The hole had to be taller than the van. The wind had to blow over it, not into it. Rabia sliced at the ground with a shovel, and Arthur did the same. Their hole was dug. There was now a deep wedge in the dust plain. After Rabia had moved the van closer to the hole and parallel to its wide berth, she grabbed a jack from the repair kit and moved it upwards from its side as high as it would go. The pair spent what little strength they had left ramming their bodies against the van in quick succession. After their fourth wave, it tipped over and into the hole. Within a few minutes, they were inside, seated on the walls with their backs against the floor. Rabia wasted no time getting into the liquor. "Want?" she asked, sweetly. Arthur shook his head and started subtracting from the manifest. "That storm will be over our heads soon," Rabia continued. "We stay in here until that Geiger counter is as quiet as a grave." She took a swig of rum, relieved to feel it burn her throat. "This will hold us up a day," Arthur said glumly. It was a strange sentiment to hear aloud, and Rabia chuckled woefully at it. "That's the least of our worries, G-Man," she said. "But don't worry. Once this clears, I'll get you there so you can count your heads." "How did you learn to do that?" Arthur asked, kindly, the first time his voice sounded sincere in wanting to learn about her. "Nothing cracks nuts like a ball-breaking hailstorm," Rabia thought to herself, glad to finally be speaking on friendly terms. "I was born into one of the great caravans," she replied. "A large tribe of civilians carrying and scavenging anything they can get their hands on to whatever settlement was willing to trade. My mother kept me on watch on top of her semi-truck's cab." Rabia wiped sweat from her face. She paused to take another swig. The sickly sweet taste of the rum washed out whatever dust was left in her mouth. "She kept me up there to look out for things like the hell beast about to be on top of us now, as well as land pirates, raiders, and slavers. She trained my eyes for all of these things, but mostly I think she kept me up there because it meant I was out of reach from lustful men. While you were likely learning bureaucratic dogma, and why anything but blue and black ink is a sin, I was learning the language of the dead planet we are stuck on." She did not mean this last part bitterly, but could tell that Arthur picked up on the implication that he was privileged. Before he could say anything, a sound not unlike an avalanche blasted above. The howling fury of the dust storm engulfed their small enclosure. The Geiger counter clicked off excitedly, and Rabia continued on. "We had to do this sort of thing often when coming through the dust plains. It is normally no problem anywhere else, as there is always a derelict structure to hide under. But out here, there is only down for shelter. Don't worry about the noise. It is only as bad as it sounds." What little light there had been in the overturned van was mostly extinguished. A silent moment passed before either of their eyes had a chance to adjust. The only light source was the burning cherry tip from Robbie's newly lit cigarette. Arthur was close enough that Rabia could feel the warmth from his body. If Arthur didn't enjoy this, then he was too tired to move. Rabia took a swig nervously. "Give the devil her due when it is deserved," Rabia said. "Only an outsider could have saved you here." By the expression wrote on his face, Rabia could tell Arthur wanted to rebuke this, but he decided against it and relented. "I'm just glad I don't have to file a 21B radiation sickness form," he said. "The margin on the tables is too wide." With the lull in the conversation threatening to turn into a full and awkward silence, Rabia changed the topic after exhaling on her cigarette. "You have a reputation among the other enforcers," she said, cleaning her sunglasses with her shirt. "The fact that you have outlived four of them is both incredible and concerning. I don't try to get them killed, if you are thinking. Not at all. It is as ugly as a whore's knee sock out there. People die. The other enforcers are less suspicious about that than you think. Believe me, if I thought you were a backstabber, I wouldn't have taken the job. The reputation is a good one, if not a little baffling. Oh? They say that you always bring them back, the dead enforcers. You always carry their bodies back with you. Why is that? Arthur replied with a staggered noise that was not exactly a word. There was another lull, and it definitely became an awkwardness. It's not something we do in the caravans, Rabia said, breaking the silence. When someone dies, they are dead weight, so it's important to your survival to leave them where they lay. If you catch someone dragging a corpse, it's because they plan on eating it and not sharing. She was answered with a howling blast of sand above them, and for a moment believed that this was the only answer she was going to get. Arthur let out a long lungful of air, and then he broke his silence. There is no dignity anymore, he said. No one has it. I don't think it's anyone's fault, given the circumstances, but people deserve to have it. I bring them back so that they can be buried, and so that their families can get whatever peace they can from it. I know that that's next to none, but it's always worth a try. Burying the dead was a foreign idea to Robbie in practice. People died. But she had heard her mother speaking about the old ways from time to time. Arthur respected the dead. He did what no one asked him to do, and he did it because it was right. Robbie wished that Arthur could change his mind about her. She rested her hand on Arthur's shoulder and took another swig of rum. You're a good man, Charlie Brown, whatever the rancid hell that means. She looked into his eyes, happy to see he looked nervous. She moved closer and parted her lips. If I ever die in action, you take my body, and you stuff the cold bitch with every lead bomb you can get your hands on, and you toss me at the feet of the scumbag's mother who killed me, she said seriously, and laughed at Arthur's shock. Arthur nodded in terrified silence, and they split a can of Spam before succumbing to the warm embrace of sleep. About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dustmice. Available on all streaming services. And dustmice.bandcamp.com.